All right, it's Friday at 11:18. We're late. We usually drop these on Thursday, but Jerry Thornton has decided to come by. I'm Jerry Carabas's fucking sloppy seconds now, which is kind of low. It's sort of a low moment in my podcasting life. But
actually, in between you, I did one with the homeless guy who lives behind the dumpster. He's got a pod.
Well, this is pretty good. Too. This is pretty good.
That's why I'm late.
Well, this is why you're leaving. Is you're doing to do a podcast. You're leaving WEEI, a radio giant, to go to Barstool Sports and do a podcast. Which, if you think about it, on its face seems insane, but it really is in no way crazy. It actually makes perfect sense to me in 2016.
Does it really? Because I wasn't sure how it was going to play inside this building.
Well, how has it played in this building?
It's been unbelievably positive.
To your face.
There's not a person. Yeah, maybe to my face.
I don't know what's going on
behind the scenes, but you never do around here. No, I think people get it in a way that surprises me, that it's weird to land at a legitimate media outlet like this, which is my goal all along, and then go back to Barstool. But I think that's because the shifting paradigm, I guess, that's how media is now. It's that kind of, you know, modern, you know, state of the art, you know, totally plugged in digital thing is the future.
But it's all, I mean, the other reason I think you're making more money is what I understand, and it is easier. I mean, what you're going to do now is easier in a way, right? I mean, you were writing and doing radio. Writing and doing a podcast is just, I mean, I've done both. It's just easier.
Yeah, I mean, I can't.
No?
Oh, no, positively.
Daily podcast?
Weekly.
Once a week?
Once a week, right.
How long is the podcast going to be?
Theirs tend to be about an hour.
How much are you going to write? Same as you did here?
Yeah, I'd
so you're going from 20 hours a week on the air to 1 hour a week.
Yeah,
exactly.
So now,
you're stealing.
A difference is it's me. I have complete
ownership. I understand
of it.
Part of it.
They don't have somebody yet who's like lining up guests or whatever, but that's something I'm excited about. When I first talked to Portnoy about it, and he mentioned the podcast thing, he says it's going to be an NFL one because we don't have that. I was like, I couldn't have drawn that up better.
That's perfect for you.
I would rather talk about the NFL in March during the dark part of their season than a lot of other topics. I'm lucky I have co-hosts who are really good at talking about like hockey, which you and I have talked privately. We're both
not I'm not interested in doing it. I'm not. If the Bruins are great, I'll do it, but it feels like pulling teeth to me.
Yeah, and basketball I can do fairly well, but I'm with the best voice in the city on that. But you know, the NFL is never boring. There's always a story. The second most popular sport is the NFL offseason, but I want to do it in a way that isn't just straight up, you know, okay, here's Ross Tucker and we're going to break down the draft. I want to have fun with it. I don't know yet, but I'll have on comics. I'll have on NFL Network people, anyone I can get that's interesting and make it different.
It does feel weird, though, to me. At first, I thought, well, he's always wanted this job, I'm guessing. He got this job, and he stayed here for what, about 2 years? Exactly 2 years. And then you left. It must have felt strange for you. I mean, you're chasing it. You get it. You have it. And then you say, because, I mean, I do believe you. I mean, I know this was your choice. You weren't pushed out of here. But you decided to say, I'm walking away. I think it takes some guts. No?
Yeah.
No?
The easy part was telling Barstool yes.
Sure,
the hard part was telling this company that took a total flyer on an outsider. And for 2 years, I walk in, and there's a broadcaster, there's a journalist, he played professional football, he played baseball, and me. Like, a guy with a laptop who had access to the webpage at Barstool. And I get that is weird, and I thought there'd be some blowback, because, well, come on, like, we brought you along, we brought you in here, we gave you a seat at the table. And so I was nervous about that, really, because there's an emotional component.
Sure.
I like what I do.
Did you enjoy your time with Dale and Holly?
Positively.
The whole time. No issues. No drama.
No. I took coaching. I told these guys when I started what I always told my roommates, which is, if you have a problem, take it to me. If I have a problem, I'll take it to you.
It's not the EI way.
No, definitely not.
I can tell you.
And I had friends who'd move in together, and I have to spend all day, every day, listening to them whine to me about
the other guy,
who watches what movie and what he does with the laundry basket.
Yeah.
Well, so we kept stuff in-house that they gave me coaching, and it was constructive, and it was helpful. And, you know, all they ever asked me to do, have more fun, enjoy yourself more. This is good. And the ratings were good. That was something I was worried about. The hits on the website were good.
It was a popular blog they had.
So, you know, it's not how I drew it up that after 2 years I was going to bounce.
Yeah.
And it's only because of the opportunity Barstool's given me. It's not because I'm like, fuck this place.
Did you ever get to a point, though, like where you felt like you were an equal partner in the show, or did you always feel like you were on the Dale and Holly show?
An equal partner. I mean, this is literally what I was.
Because I got to a point where I felt like, whether I was or not, I felt like I was an equal partner in the morning. I wasn't even, but I felt like I was.
I felt like I was welcome to be an equal partner, but as I sort of got more into the flow of the show, it was better off if I let two guys who are experienced hosts be experienced hosts and be the guy who kind of drops in with a different voice or the different perspective or whatever. Because these guys had a chemistry. They've been together a long time, and I know I was sort of parachuted into their world. And so fitting took a lot of being able to read a room. You know, I've been doing stand-up for 26 years. Yeah. I like to think I can gauge, you know, what's going on and how I can best fit in and what they're looking for. I never felt like slighted or, what's the word I'm looking for.
I know what you're saying.
But I also never felt like I needed to be exactly 33 1/3% of the things that were being said on the show.
I felt like it's not even saying for me. It got to the point where, like, you would never get to a point where, say, you know, you do shows where it's just not clicking, nobody's calling, you can feel there's no energy. Did you ever get to a point where it was 3:10 or 4:20 and you just said, guys, let's fucking do this, let's do that, let's move on? Would you do that or no? Or would you let Dale, somebody's in charge of the show.
Exactly. I never felt like I needed to be the alpha male.
Right.
I would throw in things and, you know, hope that they clicked, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But at the break, I was never the guy going, all right, this is bullshit. We're spinning our wheels here.
Right.
But I mean, there were times when the death days of the calendar, you know, February,
yeah, March, right.
I remember once I randomly asked one of our guests about if clutch is a real thing. And it clicked. And I think it was John Farrell. And he said, absolutely, it isn't. And we ended up doing
that. I do remember
4
that.
Hours
sure.
after that.
Well, those are gifts on date. Right.
Yes.
Those are gifts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I was more than happy to let these guys drive the train and then me just be the conductor.
Did you get the sense at first, when you first got there, that they were like, well, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, because of some weird decisions like, okay, you're only going to be in for the middle 2 hours.
Right.
I mean, that was an odd thing. And
right.
To the point where I finally just said, all right,
we talked about that. You and I talked about that, I think, remember? And I said to you, you got to be in there for 4 hours. From your end, you have to do it. You can't be in, because it doesn't feel like you're part of the show.
Yeah.
It's like, I know you knew that. But
I think that was coming from, like, Kevin Graham as a, all right, well, let's see. And I think part of the thinking was, let's say, you know, he does 4 hours and he can't hack it. We can't cut him back. That's going to be a terrible look. But at some point, I think early on, I said, all right, every day when the city gets in their cars at 5 o'clock to drive home, I don't see how I help the show by being one of them.
I
can do it from here. And part of the justification, too, was, you know, well, you know, you've got this blog and you got to get that up running. So, yeah, I was working all day long. It was just weird to, you know, jump in partway through the show. But I don't think that was coming from anyone except, you know, management saying that's a better way to do it. But once that hit, I don't think I ever had a problem with doing the 4 hours. But you know how it is. There are days that are great. Oh. And you go, my God, I can't believe we're
This week has been unbelievable. I mean, it's just a gift from God. You have Trump, Brady, and Belichick. I mean, the three needle movers in the city.
Right.
Boom, boom, boom. And they're all, and it's like We've done the show all week. I don't even give up the phone number. It's like the beginning of Deflategate. Boom, 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 boom. And you feel like, but you say to yourself, this will never end, but eventually it ends and you'll be sitting there at 7:30 one day thinking, oh, anybody have any ideas? Anything? You got anything? And those are those feel like 40 hours. It feels so slow.
I got to feel it's more easy for you guys because you do so much more current events.
Well, why don't you guys do more of that?
Here's the standard.
I think here's my theory. Now, I'll give you a second answer.
Sure.
I think you want to. I remember when you came in, you said you're going to make Jerry Callahan look like Rachel Maddow. That was a written sentence by you, and I know where you are politically. And I get the sense sometimes, and I could definitely be wrong, that you wouldn't mind doing more of the stuff we do sometimes. Like, I heard you on your promo the other day say that you're going to be an escape. You don't want to be an escape from Donald Trump.
Oh, that was just a promo thing. And
right.
I heard Callahan screaming about it.
Yeah, he was all worked up.
Well, we did, the next 2 days, we did 8 hours about
Trump,
the election.
Right.
We
can't avoid it.
I'm
sure you might try and avoid it today. You can't avoid it. It's a fucking runaway train.
Yeah. Oh, no. I'm off.
But go ahead. But I asked the question.
You know, why we didn't do more politics, current events stuff is it's an editorial decision. First of all, I think we are good at it. When we've gotten into stuff, race or whatever,
right.
I think it's
Dale's great at it, too. And so's my. I mean, those guys are great at it.
Yeah, exactly.
So who's the editor of that?
A group decision based on the fact that what does the guy in the car want to listen to? When I was at Barstool, when I started, our target audience was 30-year-old cubicle monkeys that are overworked and underpaid and not appreciated, and we just want to give them a laugh.
I was one of them, sure. Right.
And we think all the time about the guy who gets out of work and has been out of touch for a little while, and he wants to talk about the stuff that guys are talking about, which at times are Trump, but for the most part, it's the Patriots, it's the Red Sox, it's the thing, you know, the call it Sporty McKenzie, call it what you will.
Right.
But I think that's what they want to listen to. But also, you know, we're going up against the Death Star on the other station, you know, and Felger and Maz never move off of that stuff.
But that's why I would go the other way. That's exactly why I do the other thing. I'd say we present an alternative. These guys are afraid to do this. I heard Felger the other day. You could hear fear in his voice. He doesn't want to touch it. I'd say we're not afraid. Michael Felger and Tony Maserati are afraid. If you want to go listen to the guys who are afraid, knock yourself out. Come listen to us. Yes, we're going to talk about the Patriots. Yes, we're going to talk about the Red Sox. But we're also going to talk about stuff that you guys are talking about while you're having dinner or you're having lunch with your buddies at work. And a lot of that is sports, you're right. But a lot of that is guy bullshit, too. Felger, but that, to my point is, Jerry, you're right. They have that marketed and targeted, and they have it. They have an absolute knock on it. But you guys can do the other stuff, I think, better than they can. I know you can do it better than they can.
It's doing the calculation. Like, what's going to get more listeners? Because I'm sure you get it all the time. Every time you address the campaign, you're getting people saying, come on, why can't we just talk about sports?
Fuck them,
but some of those people are real. And there
are
a lot of them out there that would say,
but
yeah,
I get the. But
I'm not, if I wanted this, I'd put on Jeff Koons or.
But
whatever,
I'm sure. But I'm sure you do. I'm sure you have the same thing that I have, which is on Twitter. When you look at the mentions, you get the same people every single day saying they're not listening to the show anymore. Every single day, and they'll reference things that happened during the show. Those guys never leave. They're never leavers.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a fair point.
Right. I think we're right.
Things have bled in into our show. You know, Colin Kaepernick was an example. Clearly the campaign, but we weren't doing it like all summer. We weren't doing like primaries and
no, we weren't either. I mean, we did a little bit,
like
not
that.
A lot though. It actually lost steam for a while. And honestly, if Hillary had won, it wouldn't even be a story right now.
Sure.
We'd be done. Like nobody would be talking about it.
Well, and the morning afternoon dynamic is part of it too. You know, people are getting up and they want to. I think so. And in that case, I defer to two co-hosts and two producers who I think clearly we have the best producers at the station. Is
who?
That?
Well, I know I don't.
Yeah, Ben and Andy.
Well, it's like, that's like, you know, I mean, we're not
the world's tallest.
Yeah, we're not talking about. You're right, exactly. Yeah.
And two co-hosts who have been doing this a long time and have a feel for it and know what their vision is. So yeah, I don't regret that we didn't do more of it. If I had my way, more pop culture stuff, you know, more. Entertainment stuff, that kind
silly
of topics
bullshit
that
stuff,
people
right.
are talking about, which is even more my sensibility, say, than trying to make, you know, Callahan look like a crazy left winger.
Did you feel during the interview process when you would interview guests, did you feel like you were sort of got better at it and did more and more of it over the last? Because I mean, when you started out, you hadn't done a lot of interviews, obviously.
Never.
Did you feel like you sucked at it at first and got better? I just felt like, you know, I started doing it, listening to sports talk radio. That's kind of how you learn to do it, right?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. That's a fair take that I'm not even saying you did suck,
but I'm just asking
it was way harder at first than it became. And
especially
with
three people,
there's
a rhythm to it that you sort of, you know, am I stepping in here? Do I need to get back? Am I asking too many questions? Am I asking enough questions?
Right. Do you have, did they just ask the question that
you just asked? I've done
do
that.
Do I expect? expand on that more?
Right.
Or tell me you haven't done this before where someone's given their answer and you're so caught up in what you're going to talk about next that you just sort of tune them out.
Oh, absolutely.
Which we all do at parties.
You listen to us today at the end of that Mike Lombardi interview. There was fucking dead air at the end of one of his questions. Jerry and I were both like, he was just talking about something in the game. And we were both, and there was like 4 seconds. We're like, oh, okay, Mike, we'll talk to you later. But I did that early on. John asked a question. We had a basketball guest about Rondo. And this is, I was like 2 weeks in. I was up next. I asked the same exact question. And they were both looked at me like, you fucking idiot. What's wrong with you? I was like, I don't know. Yeah. No idea.
You know, my first day on the job, full time, it was Belichick. You know, and
oh, really?
You can imagine meeting him and, you know, being told, okay, you can't try to sound like you're too smart because he'll just reject that. You can't ask anything that's too dumb. He'll just talk down to you. Okay, great. Well, let me just try to, you know, shoot my arrow into that narrow bullseye from 1,000 yards away.
Do you think you ever cracked him? Do you think you ever figured it out?
Yeah. I think I've got... You know how when you get that, and for me, it's a sport. Like, who can get the most? Well, that's a good question.
Right.
From anybody. But when Belichick does, it feels like you just, you know, hit the jackpot. When
you're not going to get to do this anymore.
Point. That's the biggest problem.
That was the one?
That's going to be hard. And I'll tell you, he's knocked me for a loop a couple of times, like the other day when he just came in. Jerry, you're moving up in the world. And played the tape over and over again. I sound like a stammering idiot because I totally wasn't expecting it. The first time I was ever on, he comes on. He goes, Dale, good to see you. Michael, good to see you. And Jerry, it's an honor to finally meet you. And I like day one on the job, and I was like a four-year-old kid meeting the mall Santa. Like I think I wet my pants.
Well, the one thing about you is you've never pretended not to be a fanboy or whatever you want to call it. You've never backed off that. And, you know, We mock it all the time in the morning, and you get that. We you know, that's obviously part of what we do and part of what you do, but you don't. I'll say that about you. Other people I work with care about that stuff, care about being made fun of. I'm sure it's from stand-up comedy, but it doesn't seem to me like you've ever given a shit.
Yeah.
Or am I wrong?
You are right. And as far as the fanboy thing, credit EEI for never telling me, you know, you can't be that. You can't
be yourself.
You have to be a journalist or whatever.
Right.
But at the same time, I went in knowing it's a balancing act. There's only so much of that you can do without bringing something that's some insight, some analysis to be able to back up your points without sounding like a complete buffoon. Like, I'm not painting my face and holding a foam finger. So, but at the same time, I wasn't going to. Look, when I was filling in with you guys and Brady was on the phone.
Right.
The only time I've ever spoken to him.
Happy birthday, Jerry.
Yeah, exactly. Because I sat there and I said, I can't just sit there and ask him about the wide receivers and be dishonest to myself and to people who have been reading me for years. So I think I said something like, I just want to let you know I'm a fan of your quarterbacking. And I just want to put that out there. And if you were to say happy birthday, I wouldn't have rejected it.
Right.
You know? And I know that it was self-indulgent and kind of stupid, but that's what it called for, if I'm being honest. So,
yeah.
You know, as far as the criticism, look, I would – I'm a human being, too. Just because I rock doesn't mean I'm made of stone.
It's a Cable Guy reference.
No,
it's not. It's Me, Myself, and Irene.
Yes, very good.
Wrong Jim Carrey line.
Underappreciated movie.
It's my favorite Farrelly Brothers movie.
It's your favorite?
Me, Myself, and Irene, I think, is the best Farrelly Brothers movie. The funniest. The one I laughed the most
at. It's up there, and I'm not going to fight you on that because it is – people don't appreciate it the way they should. Look, I would much rather have had 4 hours every morning of people like throwing me bouquets and
saying that
I'm a genius. But, you know, because, it's not fun to get in the car, going to the gym, and have people say that you suck.
Why don't you ever go back, though? Why don't you ever? Because we know we wanted that. Why don't you ever say Minahan sucks, Callahan sucks, Dennis, they hate each other, this or that? You're a funny guy. You're a comedian.
But part of it is because, like you said, I can take it. The other thing is you guys are fucking crazy people.
What do you mean?
Well, okay. It would be like to engage it would have been like the same reason tonight when I'm driving home and there's a guy who's trying to have road rage with me.
You just stay away?
Right. I'm just going to drive home. I'm not going to pull over the side of the road and roll up the sleeves I will settle your hash.
How do you mean crazy? And I have always gotten along.
I always felt like if I did 20 seconds going back at you, Chris Curtis would cut that into 2 hours of just everything that I ever said, taken out of context, making me sound stupid, and now it's a thing. And then also, at some point, if we're spending that much time on it, It's a disservice to that wage slave that just got in his car.
Screw them.
Who wants to hear us talk about?
See, that's
it's just the different sensibilities of the show. So it was not by accident that I didn't get into it. Just
but you would agree, though, people like, you know numbers, so do I. You know clicks. People do like to read about media beefs and listen to media beefs. You know that.
Yeah.
That's indisputable.
I think whether you lose more audience than you gain, I don't know.
I have no tangible proof of that.
And I also don't do fights all that well.
You're not a confrontational guy.
It's not kind of how I'm wired.
Right.
And it strikes me that that's
not
how you would be with your family, friends.
What do you mean?
Like you're a guy that likes the beefs.
Oh,
with
sure,
people.
Sure. But I don't like, you know. If you and I got into a big fight and I saw you somewhere else, like we saw each other at Fenway this summer, I wouldn't care. Like, I'd laugh about it and say that was funny, and I'd move on. Like, I wouldn't say I'm going to ruin Jerry Thornton's life. You wouldn't believe the amount of tweets I got the day you announced you were leaving, saying, you know, Minahan's got another notch on his gun. He got rid of Jerry Thornton. I'm looking at it thinking, is this, like, do people actually think, like, I spent time, like, in program director's offices saying, you know, I don't like Jerry Thornton. He's an asshole. Let's get rid of him. Let's move on. And they say, oh, Kirk, that's a good idea. Let's do that. Let's call up Jerry and say he's not going to work anymore.
Oh, I have no doubt that there are the loyal Kirk followers. Do you have a name for them?
Minifans.
Minifans?
Minifans,
okay,
what they're called.
You guys came up with Thornton Nation.
I'll
embrace
that's Jerry's.
It. Absolutely.
That's a good name.
The Minifans, they're out there who really think that all along it's been real.
Right.
And that you despise me. And you know how I can tell, too, is if I ever go outside the line a little bit, if I do something goofy or tweet something stupid or whatever, that they will, like, retweet that with your handle in there.
I get those all the time.
As if, like,
right,
they go, here you go, Kirk.
You know who hates that?
Go at him.
You know who hates that is Dale, because Dale will get that sometimes, and he'll be like, he'll do a quote to you. He'll be like, all capital letters, look at me, Kirk. Look at me, Kirk. Look at me. He'll taunt them, which is kind of funny. Dale makes me laugh. You know Dale. Like, Dale is a friend of mine. I love the guy. But you know Dale is about this, given he's got that sort of a persona. Dale can be a cynical motherfucker, too. And I mean that as a compliment. Dale could be a cynical guy.
Towards what?
Just in general. Like, he can be like, you can talk to Dale and bullshit about the media, and he'll shit on people, and he's funny at it, and he's actually good at it, too.
Oh, yeah. Angry Dale.
Angry Dale is a real person.
Yeah, on and off the air.
Correct.
I object to is people portray it as he's a different person when the mics go off. I have heard that repeatedly.
That's different. I know what you're saying. That's not right. The insinuation that he's an asshole, which is not true. That's different. Guys talk differently off the air than they talk on the air. I mean, I try to make it as close as you can, but you can't.
Ask poor Billy Bush.
That's a good point.
Does he get to come back now? Can he come in from out of the cold? Because
Secretary of the Pussy, maybe?
Press Secretary.
Is that a title? I don't,
the man was railroaded for having a distasteful conversation in private with another
guy.
But he looked like
such a loser, though.
Oh, he was always kissing ass.
That's what he is, though.
He's an entertainment report.
Right,
his job
right.
is to ask Harrison Ford, so how much of you is in that character?
Right.
And so, surprise, he's kissing Donald Trump's ass because he's a billionaire guest on his show. Yet, that's how Billy Bush talks. No, Dale has been is the same guy when the lights go out. And I don't know who started that stuff.
Probably me. I mean, I'm assuming it's me.
But you like Dale, and the perception from your listeners, from the Minifans, that's their fault.
I have made it very clear how much I like Dale. I get frustrated with Dale sometimes because I think Dale lets Twitter and the texters control sort of his thoughts and takes. That's my take. I think Twitter and the text line are bad for talk shows during talk shows. They're fine to look at from a news perspective, but you shouldn't look at the mentions. I never look at the text. I turn it off because it's just a waste of time.
I was going to ask you if you're a guy who turns it off.
Never. Not because I'm sensitive to it, because it's just a waste of time. If you say something like, the texts are good, is yesterday we had something. We were like, oh, we're talking about Wisconsin. Because basically they gave Trump the presidency, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, Bruce's New Jersey. You know, whoever. Van Halen's California. I'm like, you never associate anybody with Wisconsin musically, right?
Yeah.
You would think Milwaukee is some real... Detroit has got all these great rockers. So I said, how about Milwaukee or Wisconsin? And that's where the texts are great. You just wait for it. And boom, there it was. Boom, boom, boom. Steve Miller, whatever, you know. And then you're done. That's where I think they're useful. For me, it's like, fuck you, talk sports. Minahan, you suck. Like, I get that. Like, it's just...
Right,
but why, I mean, what's the point? Like, you know, unless they're funny, what's the point? Same with Twitter. Like, it's fine, but, you know, after a while, it gets sort of repetitive.
Yeah, it can be an asset, and I've learned to, you know, steel myself to the inevitable. Thought You Suck, You've Ruined My Favorite Show.
Right. I still get that.
That's what Barstool was a great way to say, oh, my
right.
God, brutal, the worst brutal. Bottom feeders in the world. All those ones and zeros on there. And I've said this to you before.
Some are funny, though.
If I could go 3 consecutive comments without someone telling me that I molest the kids that I coach, I'm like, I'm having a good day.
That's not bad.
And talking to Carrabba's the other day, it's just as it always has been. Like,
sure.
It hasn't – these guys would open a vein to help Barstool in any way, and yet they're going to shit on everybody who goes and posts anything. And so that's how it is. That's our text line is so mild compared to that.
Let's get to the important stuff,
shoot,
the stuff that really matters. Will you be grading these sex scandals with the teachers again?
I have never had a conversation with a stoolie in the last 2 years.
That did not. That's
come
the one
up.
I wonder about
yeah,
the most.
Yeah.
Is the answer yes?
Yes.
Good.
As a matter of fact, when I first spoke to Portnoy, it was, you know, so what do you see in coming back to do? Like, you know, write your Patriots blogs, knee-jerk reaction. It was the third thing he mentioned, the teacher thing. Yeah. And
what do you say to those who say, well, let's turn it on our head? If you graded, you know, the males for it or whatever, they're rapists and the women aren't. How do you respond to that question? Because I'm sure you get it all the time.
Yes, that I am a huge believer in the double standard.
It's
in the Constitution for a reason. That the founding fathers knew you had to.
The sex grant?
The double standard.
Yeah, I think it's
Bill of Rights. It's in there someplace.
Fifth or sixth or something, yes.
But, yeah, that's even the weirdest thing. Because at one time there was like a couple of those stories in a span of a couple of weeks.
Who was the first? Was it Mary Kay Letourneau? Was she the one who rocketed sex scandals?
I suppose if you go back, Pamela Smart was probably the first one.
Hers was kind of
serious. Mary Kay Letourneau, right. And Deb LaFave.
Oh, she was the hot
blonde
one, the Florida one?
Yeah, she still might be the most attractive.
She might be the career leader.
And so I said, geez, maybe I can group these together but put a sports hook on it. How about if I take like 9 of them and do like a batting order? Like, okay, this one's real tenacious. She, you know, she's a good leadoff hitter, power hitters or whatever. So I thought it was like a one and done.
It got read like
crazy.
And
then people started sending them to me. And it got to the point where I had to find a common theme. So I started grading them. And I had no idea how huge it would be.
Did Barstool do it in your absence?
No,
that's
kind
of sweet.
One.
They sort of kept it away.
And I'll still get from people sending them to me saying, hey, can you do anything with this? So I finally, and you guys mentioned this on the air the other day, once I got established and I felt, okay, the blog is up and running,
I was part of this sort of, when it happened, I was part of the group that was talking about it when it happened. So you did one for the website, yeah.
Yes, and I let Rob know ahead of time.
Right.
And I said, look, this is out there. I'm not going to die on the hill of this thing. If you want to post it, it's there. Fine. Well, so it goes up. And a media member contacted him.
Sure.
Saying,
Chad Finn, I'm guessing.
It was Chad Finn, right? Yes, saying that his editors wanted him to ask about it. And Rob said, oh, well, that's coming down. And Finn supposedly said, and I wasn't privy to the conversation, but I believe that it's true. Mm-hmm. He said, you know what? I like Jerry, so I'm glad it's down. Apparently, some people do consider it kind of rapey. What shouldn't be lost in it is that I'm ridiculing these people.
Sure.
You know, these are grown-ups who are throwing away their career, their college education, to seduce a male student. These are women that are so blinded by whatever that they're throwing their lives away, and I'm mocking them. I'm not encouraging them. So for all my kids' teachers out there.
I'm not going to ask you. I mean, I'm going to ask you, and you can speak on it yourself. I wrote for the website for 6 or 7 years. I was a columnist for the last 4 years. Literally wrote whatever I wanted. Things that would get, you know, Rob Bradford, who was my boss, he would not be happy. You know, I have to walk in the clubhouse, have to deal with Red Sox players, with media members. He literally never said to me once, don't do this ever. Not one time. Not ever. Not ever. I mean, you can't ask for a better boss than that.
Exactly. Only edited me for grammar. It'll
like
follow
AP
the
style
AP
shit?
Style.
Right.
Yeah, don't,
yeah, yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah,
you
yeah.
can't write fourth
right.
the number
right. zero
the other,
nine
F-O-U-R-T.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's amazing, especially because, I mean, it's a weird fit. I mean, you look at all these, you know, beat reporters and guys who are down at the stadium and they're transcribing, you know, press conferences. And then I come in there and I'm doing goofy, you know, Rob Gronkowski sex life stuff and you know, posting pictures of Casey McDonald when she got hired by NESN.
Right.
And they're saying, good, that's what we want
that gets
you to
read.
Do. Rob has sent me stuff saying, hey, just so you know. You know, Jenny Dell just posted something, and
right.
and I love him for that because it's not what most EEI.com list viewers are coming in to read.
In a weird way, it's got to be the closest you're ever going to get to have a Portnoy type for a boss in the mainstream media, if that makes sense, in terms of just saying, you know, write what you want. I mean, I know Portnoy is a little more extreme, but that's about as good as you're going to get. I mean, if you went to Comcast and wrote there, if you went somewhere else, that was never going to happen.
Yeah, and it's such a spectrum, you know, and you know, if I was talking about talk radio, I'd say on one end you got the Ted Sarandis, like super serious. Everything is about the backcourt and the Mountain West Conference. Right. And the other end is maybe the Mike Adams, where it's all just off the wall.
Goofy shit, right.
And, you know, somewhere in that spectrum, like, I'm allowed to be more to the Mike Adams end. But when I come to Barstool, I'm actually more of the legit, if that's the right word, a guy who's actually doing more sports stuff and analysis, because they've got the other stuff covered. You know, if Gronk, you know, drops Trow in a bar or something, there's a Barstool guy who'll be on that. And, and by the way, if Rob Gronkowski ever does drop Trow, I'd like a piece of that, that blog. Thank you very much. Just the blog.
Who do you hate in the sports media right now? I mean, I know the answer to that question, but I'll let you ask before I give specific examples and you say yes or no.
You know what? It's really still just Shank.
That's it?
Yeah, because here's the thing. As a fan...
Took a shot at you the other day. Another one.
Yeah, Jerry from Weymouth, you know. Right. Because he can't take it, because he's too thin-skinned. The fact that I was in here a week, and he's coming on your airways to defend himself after, like, throwing shade at me and Dale.
When was this? I remember this.
It would have been December two years ago. After I started. Like, he wrote something about fanboys on the radio, fanboy comedians,
I
forget how he referred to his veiled reference to Dale.
It was something about how he was in the pocket of somebody.
Yeah, like, you know, announcers.
It was weird.
Yeah. And so
we went at him pretty good, I think.
Yeah, and I wrote a blog respondent, and he comes on the air, and Phil Graham comes up. I'm sorry, Phil Zachary comes up to me and says, "You're here a couple of days? Is this what you do? Is this what you bring to the table?" Like, he's been banned from our airways, and he came on to talk about it. I'm like, I'm just a guy trying to get along. I always tooled on Borges for being a Patriots hater and a guy who has nothing but contempt for fans or whatever. Right. But he can take it.
He doesn't care. I'll say that about Ron.
I did Comcast with him the day the Wells report came out.
Right.
And just accused Brady of being a cheater and me of being a fanboy. 5 minutes later, we're in the green room talking about golf.
Yeah, he's not a bad guy.
No, I saw him down in Phoenix for the Super Bowl on the street. And he's going, "Come on, what do you think he was doing there for 90 seconds in the bathroom?" And see that guy? That's the guy everyone said I plagiarized with Friendly and never even happened. I go, okay, I like him for his cantankerous old guy thing. This is going to surprise you. I don't hate Tangway. I know you love him as a guy.
Friend, you know, I mean.
But like,
why would you hate him, though?
Well, I mean, I would have just cause
because
he came on and said, like, he shouldn't be here, he shouldn't be on the radio,
that kind of stuff.
But I honestly don't. It was a fun exchange. And then of all the damn things, for him to get a copy of the book and, like, be plugging it on the air and then completely changed his whole persona about me. And I get he's being a rodeo clown. He's like, "Hey, you abused me. Let's have
come
some
out and
fun.
Dance for us."
But I haven't made enemies. I really haven't.
Wish I could say the same. The book, which Jerry and I never got a copy of, by the way, we've plugged for you. Might as well do it right now. What title is?
From Darkness to Dynasty.
Where I see this, Jerry, at every bookstore. I told you this the other day when I say there's not a bookstore I don't go to where I don't see copies of it. And I see it in that local bestsellers list every week for the last month or so. Right?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And it's
how long did it take you to write it?
Off and on, probably 4 years, because I'd put it aside for months, and it would be that project that's not done. It all started. When I was at the Stool, I got contacted by an agency in Manhattan who represent Stephanie Myers, the
Twilight books.
Twilight books, exactly. Right. And would you be interested in writing a book? And I was sure in theory, and we spent months coming up with something. And you know, this story, all these bizarre, dysfunctional. On the field, off the field, the incompetence of the Patriots was the stuff I grew up on.
Yeah, me
my
too,
older
sure.
brothers
sure.
told me these stories. I read about them and thought this story's never been told. So I always wanted to read this book. No one else was doing it. So the universe was taking its sweet time. So I jumped on it. And once it got largely done, it's been something I've been – it sold in like a day.
You know?
And I'm proud of that. And look, I don't know if it's – going to be, you know, a huge success. I know that the warehouse is running out of them.
People, well, it's clearly a regional, regionally focused book, right?
Yeah,
I mean, by and large.
I would think so. I like to think it would have appeal for, even if you didn't grow up in that, in that area, because it's such a bizarre story. And,
right.
and you know, the way the NFL is now, and it's so controlled and computerized, and you know, everything is first class, to read about those days, and I'm talking right up until 2001,
wild.
Just how fly-by-night they were, and the drunks in the stands, and you know, and them, you know, having games at, you know, Fenway Park, and the stands burning down, and them sending a drunk guy out onto the field, and that kind of stuff. I would like to think, if let's say I'm, you know, I like football, but I'm living in L.A., I'd like to think, all right, this is a unique story for a team that's center of the sports universe for 15 years.
Are you humping this book like crazy? Books, you're going to all the stores and everything, or no?
I've been
pouring out like a madman?
Yeah, and it's fun. There's no requirement to do these appearances, but
right.
I'm liking that thing, and the whole interaction with people, and they want to tell you their stories, and you know, when there's a line of people standing there for, and this once happened, 45 frigging minutes, like I'm Space
really?
Mountain.
Where was
there
this?
Were people. This was in Hanover.
Okay,
at a bar, I'd done this through this party, and then the library in Weymouth that I never went to when I was a student. I just wasn't a good student.
I could tell.
And people are coming and they're standing around the corner. That's a great thing. The downside of it is, to a person, they say, love listening to you on the radio every day. You guys are great. I listen all the time on my ride home. You really make it. And I'm like, and I'm sitting here going, I'm halfway to this decision. I'm sorry?
How long did you know for that you were leaving before you told everyone?
Before I made it.
And why did you say that? Why did you say it on the air instead of JerryThornton.net?
The offer was there for a while, and it was just
Portnoy.
A matter of taking the
right.
step.
Who you went to? But you went to him first, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
Then he's like, "Yeah, no problem, whatever you want."
Yeah, there's a rule of life that I don't follow, but you should never stop looking for a job.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And I was ready to make it here. Listen, my biggest concern was that I might not be extended another contract. Like, maybe they wouldn't like me, or I'd have to make a case and go, here's the ratings and here's the hits. And then there was a guy on the morning show. Oh, wait, it was you, Kirk.
What's
saying, yeah, my biggest fear is Thornton's going to get us get a new contract.
It's a good line.
It was good. I laughed. But so when I got the offer, and it was, look, I'd heard the process is horrible.
What's that?
Of negotiating your contract. Oh. They just say,
I've gone through about three or four of them the last 3 years, yeah.
People had told me, you know, get an agent. You don't want to go through it. It's so demoralizing.
Right.
I heard nothing but good things. It was just, hey, you're a great fit here. We like the way it's going. Be more of you. You know, the website's great.
So what's the problem?
You know, they offered a raise. Wasn't.
Oh, you weren't happy with the raise.
It was just like, all right, and I could come back with one, but, you know, I have an option. And I left Barstool, and their good graces.
But you never played the leverage card on EEI?
No, I didn't go back.
You didn't?
That way. And it's, you know, I have a brother-in-law who I talk to about this. He's a labor negotiator, like a vice president from major companies. And he calls it tin cup in it.
Right.
Where you just go, hey, you know, you rattle your cup. Can you give more? And I said, let's say they come up. Let's say it's exactly the same compensation. I'd still take the Barstool thing.
Yeah.
I love podcasts.
Right.
You know, I mean, you love this format.
Sure,
right?
Absolutely.
I listen to them. I consume them.
Me too.
That audience reach is something that EEI.
But you were doing one here.
What's that?
But you were doing one here.
I've been doing one, and it's something I do for me. I don't know if it has much reach. It was among their more popular until this behemoth came
along.
Naturally.
Sure, of course. If they started actually paying attention to it.
I bow down. In fact, now I physically have to kneel when you come down the hallway.
Well,
because
that's part of the last contract requirement. See, that's what
podcast
you do.
King
does this change your – did being on EEI help you financially from a stand-up perspective?
Immensely.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many people that don't. It's almost like two separate worlds. There's some overlap there.
Correct.
There's a Venn diagram where the two circles intersect.
Yeah.
But the Barstool audience, it's a certain type of demo.
No question.
And the EEI one is, it's bigger. It's more my peers and yours.
Correct.
You know, people in our age bracket.
Yep.
But I mean, I can't go to a bar or do a bar appearance. I'm going to get cornered by four bros who are just like, dude, you got to come back to Barstool.
Yeah, where'd you go?
Yeah. I go, Dad, I didn't die. I just went to a URL you can log on to without getting fired from your job. I got cornered at a at a party a couple of weeks ago, and this is before I'd even circle back with Dave. And these guys just kept on, like, getting me and going, come on, you got to come back. Portnoy has said he's never going to replace you until he can find someone who's good as you. He wants you back. I'm like, and then it started to become real when I got to the end of my rookie deal here.
Sure.
And when you ask somebody for a price point and they just say, okay, it's a little hard to say, all right, now let me go back to my other, you know, my employer. You just
ask for more the first time, Jerry, with Portnoy. Maybe you undersold yourself. Who knows?
Oh, believe me, that's in there. What's the old Danny DeVito and Taxi thing? Somewhere there's a figure. Right. This is too high. His hands right. up. Here. This right. is too low.
Right.
But the other thing is, all else being equal, to be able to, say, have a podcast among the ones that you go on iTunes.
Oh, forget
and
it.
And they're number one, number
Barstool's
three,
a machine,
number two.
A machine. Right. Oh, you know, you're going to roll. Barstool right. and football combination, you're not going to – that's a can't miss.
Well, the pressure's on. You know,
that's
I can't,
true.
I can't go and just do crap. At the
right.
same time, I listen to a lot of podcasts, not just Barstool, but but most nights I'm driving home. I'm done with talking about EEI business, and I'm listening to – yeah, Corolla or Nerdist or Gilbert Gottfried.
Or Marin or whoever. Yeah,
yeah.
I'd listen to those guys.
I like that whole feel, and I you know.
Well, it's kind of what I've modeled this on in a lot of ways is like Gilbert and Marin and Nerdist, which is just conversation. There's not a lot of, you know.
Not an interview.
I'm not a big fan of the Marin podcast, and when they do, like, I'm not a big fan of the monologues for the first 15, 20 minutes of a podcast.
Saying, yeah.
I'm not a big fan of that. I like to get to it.
He did like 20 minutes about him working on 5 new minutes of stand-up,
yeah,
and
I'm
wasn't prepared,
like,
and
nah,
it didn't go well.
Right.
But I get he's bearing his soul there.
That's true.
I'll tell you a great one. And I just, there was an actress I wanted to hear from on with Baldwin. Alec Baldwin.
Here's the thing with Alec Baldwin.
It's amazing.
It's a, like, great podcast.
His voice is unbelievable. It's like your mother's love.
Well, you know what's bad is for me is I do Blue Apron reads on the show. But I think of his voice because he does them all the time. You know, you get some fresh food at Blue Aprons. Wonderful, you know, nuts. And I'm reading it and I'm like with my shitty voice. I'm like, this sucks. But he's excellent. He's an excellent. You know what he's good at is I've listened to him, like, he did a podcast with Mickey Rourke, which was really good.
Okay.
But when he does a podcast with a guy, he never says, you know, like, listen, basically, like, hey, I'm a fucking movie star too. He actually has a conversation with the guy. It was funny during it, Mickey Rourke's like, yeah, he's like, I was in that movie 9.5 weeks with that broad, what's her name? The blonde with the big tits. And you're like, oh shit, that's right. And Baldwin's like, oh, yes, I know her very well. But he does a good job.
That was his wife.
Who was the
his ex-wife,
who
right?
was the, actress you listened to with Baldwin?
It was actually Ellie Kemper. Kempler.
Oh, from The Office.
And Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah, yeah.
So that got me into listening to him. And
he does a great job.
Kirk Minahan first joined WEEI
right.
as a flash guy.
For Kirk Minahan, there's always controversy surrounding him.
Yeah, you go, that's the voice of God.
Right.
And I like his thing, even though it's like even less conversational than some of the other ones I like.
Yes.
But I love the podcasts are rough and people interrupt each other. And
sure.
I could
Karabas
say,
does a good job.
Yeah, he does. I enjoyed being on with them. And that's another thing.
I did too,
like,
yeah.
I Portnoy has me on his, and it's just so, like, complimentary. Like, you're still a part of this
right.
this equation.
Well, you always
and
were, right, in his mind?
And I didn't realize the extent to which I was. As they go huge and they go corporate and they move to New York, and I'm feeling like, all right, well, that's a thing that's in my past. But the way those guys have embrace the fact that I'm returning, and now this new guard like Karabas and, you know, Pete Blackburn,
right,
those guys.
Yeah.
It's proof positive that I'm making the right decision.
Sure.
You know, the money is part of it, but it's not all of it. It's to be able to be plugged back into that. That's really, I think, my sensibility, even more than anything that I would ever be able to do at EEI. As accommodating as people have been, they still got that pirate ship mentality.
When's your last day here?
It's going to be Friday the 18th.
So a week from today when we're taping this. And you're done? You think you'll be back on in some form or fashion? Fill-in work?
Another surprise that I've been that they hit me with was, you know, coming to me and saying, you know, you're welcome here anytime. So if you want to come as a fill-in host, and I say, sure, subject to the requirements of the service, master and commander line.
Right.
But yeah, Barstool's fine with it. Of course I am. They're going to be keeping the lights on at home. But, you know, they say, you want to use our studios to podcast from? Like, are you kidding me?
Sure.
My plan is to
you're not moving
the
to
train
New York,
out
obviously,
to New
right?
York. Yeah.
Right.
So that's great. To be able to pull this off and not burn bridges, and to have my coworkers say, happy for you. You're doing the right thing. Guys who have been moved around in this business, have been fired in some cases, have been forced to work with Mike Salk. I mean, all sorts of horrors that they've had to endure to have them say, look, we get it, instead of, come on, 2 years, we have something going here, our ratings are good.
Right.
And obviously, they'll be fine without me, but I appreciate that it's not goodbye. I'm not. Never let your shadow darken our door again, sir. And I'm glad to have you have me on. And this, I know.
Well, I'm welcome. Anytime you want me on that wacky Barstool football, I'll tell dick jokes. I'll do the whole Barstool thing. I'll rate sex teachers. I'll do whatever you want. I'll dance for you.
Yeah.
So I go to jerrythornton.net, right? I can go there and get the book there. I can go to amazon.com and get the book as well, right? One more time, the title is?
From Darkness to Dynasty. From the Darkness first 40 to Dynasty. Years of the New England Patriots. And bookstores everywhere, as you said.
So and we'll be seeing the podcast in about a month or so? No, less?
See how long it takes. Because when I start there, that's like Thanksgiving week. I mean, I want to get into it soon. Because, football season is draining through the hourglass now before. So I hope this was good for all the Minna fans who think that we despise each other and think this was going to be, the pod dome. Two men enter. Only one man will leave.
All right, Jerry. Well, I have a feeling we might see you at one point on the Dino casting couch. I'm not giving up that thing yet. With me and Callahan, you'll do a show with us at some point.
Is this the permanent way of doing things?
I think so. You think so or no? I like the idea of bringing the floating third person every day.
If you don't have someone solid, someone that you want to be with 20 hours,
well, that's the thing. That's the thing. So you agree that if they say, because they've pushed us on a couple of people, and we're sort of eh. If you go into work with somebody that you're, it's going to get ugly at some point. Jerry and I are just going to turn on them and it'll suck. What's the point of that, We like the people we have. We bring them. They leave. What's great is they come in at like 5:30 and then they leave at 10:02. You don't deal with the post-show stuff. They just leave and then you focus on your show. You're kind of in control, which I like. I'm not saying we're not going to do it at some point, but right now, like you said, if you don't want to do it, why do it? Yep. The numbers are great, so what's the point?
I'm with you. Yeah, I'll jump in.
All right.
If you guys want to do it, I've enjoyed doing shows with you guys.
All right, Jerry, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks again for listening to the Enough About Me podcast. Actually, you know what? I'm really not thankful at all. You should be thanking me. You get this shit every week, these great podcasts, totally free. Do me a favor. Would you go to iTunes, download it, go to Stitcher, do the same, and leave a rating, leave a review. That's where you can help me out. This podcast is going to be number one again. I guarantee it. And you're going to help me along with the process. So for that, I guess at the end, maybe I will thank you. There's a lot of thank yous going back and forth. Here's the point. Fuck you.